Yeah, I'd like to convene the Finance Committee. We have a quorum present, and we have the minutes from February the 11th. Representative Benson, have you had a chance to review them?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I have, and I move the minutes.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Couple of announcements. House File 775 by Representative Beard. We're removing from the agenda, the reason being that it did pass last year as part of one of the omnibus bills. And it had also been being carried as a separate bill. So if anybody's here for that one, it's already the law. And then items 5, 6, and 7 on the agenda, just to give everybody a heads up, all three of those bills are bills that passed last year, and because they weren't acted on the House upon the House floor, they were referred back to committee. So they're all three bills that we've heard before, so it's more a procedural process at this point. But the first bill that we have up this morning is House File 2624 by Representative Wagenius, dealing with the Environmental and Natural Resources. Representative Kahn?
Just a quick check. Have you checked over all of those bills to see if they need any technical amendments? So they're all okay?
We should be okay.
Okay.
Yeah. With that, Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And with me is Susan Thornton from LCCMR. And members, what you have before you today is House File 2624. Mm-hmm. And I will move the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Division report for House File 2624, the first committee engrossment.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Wagenius.
I move the House File 2624, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, the motion then is before us, and if you could walk us through. Oh, I see you have an amendment. Do you want to take the amendment?
There is a technical amendment, members, and I would like to move that amendment.
Okay, that motion is before us. That's the A2 amendment. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. Members, what you have before you in 2624 are the recommendations from the Citizens and Legislative Committee on Natural Resources. These are the recommendations to spend the dividends that we get from the lottery money. And I just want to give you a tiny bit of the process that we went through. The process was long. It was arduous. There were 240 proposals in response to the RFP for a total of $163 million. 85 of the proposals were reviewed by the committee. In other words, people came in, had a half an hour to talk about their each individual proposal, and the committee could talk to folks. Of those 85, 48 are in 2624. And members, I'm going to call your attention to this in your packet because it is the summary sheet of how, in multiple ways, to look at what is in this bill. And I will tell you that we have just a fantastic staff in LCCMR, and they do wonders for us. What I'm going to start with is the summary of recommendations by subdivision. I'm not going to read this to you, members. I know you're totally competent to read this for yourself, but I'm going to just draw your attention to it. There were six categories for which RFPs were put forth. And this is how the dollars are recommended to be spent. On the back page of this first sheet, you will see the summary of recommendations by proposer affiliation, in other words, federal government or local government unit. At the bottom of the page, you'll see this summary of project recommendations by area of impact. And then on the next sheet, you can see the summary of the proposals by subdivision. And then at the bottom, a summary of expected outcomes across each subdivision. And I understand there's also I know in here there's a listing of each of the projects. One of the things I would like to draw your attention to under a summary of expected outcomes across subdivisions is that there are a number of projects in here asking for scientific information to help us manage our resource. Only one of the members of LCCMR is a scientist. So what the staff does, and to their great credit, they have peer review panels to look at each of these science projects. They draw from people across the United States, and each of the projects is reviewed, commented upon, and folks go back and talk to folks from LCCMR go back and talk to the proposers if a project needs to be tweaked in any way, can be improved in any way. And sometimes there are good suggestions for improvements. But I just tell you about this because I think this is an expertise that LCCM offers to the legislature that is unusual and very beneficial. Members, I can go through each project. There are 48 of them. I would be glad to do that. Or we could, Mr. Chair, at your... we went over each project in the finance division, the environment finance division. I'd be glad to go over each one, or we could. People might just want to draw their attention to specific projects. What would you prefer?
I think the approach where maybe you just hit the highlights and people have copies of what the projects are as well as the bill, and if there are specific questions, then we can. Maybe do it that way if the author is comfortable in that approach.
Any approach is fine with me. So
okay.
If I go through each project in detail, it will take me an hour. So I will more hit the highlights.
I think the highlights would be just fine.
Okay. I'm going to draw your attention to page 2, which is the natural resource data information. And this is basic data that we need to manage the state's resources, from the county geologic atlases, which measure the amount of water in a underground that can be used. We are just going county by county through the state right now, looking for quantity. We're adding some, looking at some breaks along some of the borders of aquifers, particularly the St. Lawrence Formation in southeast Minnesota, and see if it does or does not affect the lower aquifers. We're updating the Minnesota Wetlands Inventory. Now I'm on page 3, a Minnesota Breeding Bird Atlas done on a township level. We're going to do a integrated operational bird conservation plan for Minnesota. We're going to look at pollinator decline in Minnesota. That's on the bottom of page 3. I mean, I think you all are familiar with the collapse of bee colonies. On the page 4, there is looking at the brine that comes up from underneath the mine in Sudan, in our underground park in Sudan. This is one of the projects where the scientists reviewed it, and we're totally excited about this particular project. We're quantifying carbon burial in wetlands. That's on page line 4.12. Doing strategic planning for artificial, identifying ways to make a break between artificial and natural watersheds in order to prevent pollution. There is a, in at the bottom of page 4, folks in the Chippewa River watershed are looking, targeting sensitive fields for change practices. On 5.9, the Farmers Legal Action Group is assessing our laws to protect farm and agricultural land. On 5.19, you know about the moose decline. This is tracking moose, looking at the decline over the last 20 years and tracking moose where we still have them. At the bottom of page 5, this is a training cooperative between MnDOT, DNR, and Bowser, working with the University of Minnesota to train people to do better restorations, because we are spending a lot of money on restorations right now, and not every one of them works. On 6.6, DNR has a, we're going to acquiring some land here, which is with rare species on it, and doing a lot of restoration and providing incentives for native prairie landowners to improve their land. There is some state park acquisition, 9 acres in Crow Wing State Park. There are two parcels on the river, 160 acres at Scenic State Park, 55 acres at Teddy Gooch, and 19 at Split Rock, and 100 at William O'Brien. That's for a total of $2.2 million. On 7.7, there is a unique ecosystem along the Minnesota corridor. There are rock outcroppings with very specialized plant and animal communities that are rare to Minnesota. We're going to protect 12 parcels there for a total of 702 acres. Then in 7.16 is the Minnesota Habitat Conservation Partnership. It's a supplement for the corridor in the outstate. And you'll see a similar supplement for the quarter in the metro on 8.29. If you go to 10.3, we are conserving sensitive and priority shorelines in Cass County, helping the community there, actually, that wants to do this. They need assistance for the donation of perpetual conservation easements. On 10.16, this is to the Nature Conservancy to develop prairie-based economics so there is a sustainable income from a prairie. They're looking at that issue. 10.30, now we're getting to water resources. We have switched. We went from data to land, and now we are into water resources. And the first one is identifying chemical markers to characterize the sources of endocrine disruptors and pharmaceuticals entering surface waters, and the Zumbro River watershed is going to be used to test that. There is a DNR proposal to look at old pilings, mining pilings that are releasing sulfate, turns into sulfite, and releases mercury. So we're looking at how to prevent that from happening. There is money to look at the impact of effluent in surface waters, to look at it, the impacts on fish. There is an interesting project on 11.28 where folks in the Mapleton area in Blue Earth County, the Blue Earth County Drainage Authority, has gotten together to reduce soil erosion and peak water flows and nutrient loading through a demonstration model that they are will evaluate and share with the rest of the state. This is a locally generated project. We're 12.5, assessing septic system discharge into lakes. What does that mean for the biology of the lakes? We're looking for, just as we're looking at septic system discharges, we're looking at dioxins in the lakes and how they accumulate in fish and figure out what we can do about that. There is an assessment, we're now on page 12 at 12.28, an assessment of shallow lake management. It's going to be a study of 150 lakes in 5 regions to see how we're managing lakes, to see if we can do it better. On 13.3, we're evaluating nearshore inland water habitat and the impacts from development and looking for better management practices here. 13.15, there's an increase in the water temperature, and we're trying to protect our trout and looking at one of the markers, which is the bugs that the trout eat in the wintertime, and trying to figure out how we can minimize deep stream temperature changes to protect our trout population. Now I've moved now into 13.27. We're looking at invasive species in this next section. And the first one is for the continuation of the development of biological controls for European buckthorn and garlic mustard. In the next part, this was a specific request to the University of Minnesota to look at the emerald ash borer issue. And so this was a direct response, and they are looking at the potential impacts of emerald ash borer on Minnesota's black ash forests, and looking, this is going to be a huge problem for that area of our state. The impacts are likely to be extreme, and so there's huge potential for invasives. So we're looking at what species might mitigate the problems up there. Similarly, there is a similar issue on 14.16, looking at how the health of a forest might mitigate or might resist invasive species. And we're obviously looking for tools to slow down invasive species going into forests. 14.26, this is evaluating a bioacoustic technology to deal with the round goby that is in Lake Superior, looking is that a way to reduce the population of the round goby. On 15.15, I think this committee has heard about using algae for fuels. There's a pilot project going on at the system in Metropolitan Pig's Eye treatment plant, and this is going up to a pilot scale system there for making fuels from algae. 15.11, looking at how climate change and fertilizing and irrigation of
Mr. Chair,
Representative Wagenius.
I just have a technical question. Mm-hmm. The numbers she's saying do not match up with the bill. You're off by a number of lines. So I don't know if you have the right copy or if I have the right copy.
I'm sure that I am probably had the copy that I had in my committee, and if it changed between committees, we only had one amendment, so I'm sorry I didn't.
She keeps referring to lines, and they're different than what I'm reading here. And I'm wondering if you can give her the right bill or if we can, or if we all have the wrong bill.
I have the wrong bill, and I apologize
okay.
for that.
So we have the right one, and I don't know how complicated that is to make the, as you're going through that adjustment.
way off by one line.
Okay, I can...
I was following you, but I wasn't paying as close attention to the lines as apparently Representative Junkie was.
Well, all of these are in order, unemployment.
I do know that. I could see that. When you're referring to stuff on specific lines...
I will quit doing that then and just refer to the black red lines.
Drop specific lines.
Okay. We had one amendment in the Environment Committee, and it was a technical amendment. I did not know it would throw us off by lines, or I would have rewritten this. I apologize for that. Okay. I am now looking at linking habitat restoration to bioenergy and local economics. This is restoring high-quality native habitats and expanding market opportunities for utilizing the things we take off the land in restoration for bioenergy. Then there's a demonstration project looking at sustainable energy practices at the residential environmental learning centers. And this is for each one of the centers. So each one will have energy efficiency, conservation practices, and kids will be taught about those as well. We're doing a life cycle analysis of options for Minnesota's energy needs. And now I've moved into environmental education, which is the last category, and I will go over the projects in there. The first one is the Minnesota Conservation Apprenticeship Academy, and this is with the Board of Soil and Water Resources in cooperation with the Minnesota Conservation Court. And this is mentoring folks who will be working in the field. There are a lot of retirements coming in the field right now, and it's this way of mentoring so that younger folks entering the field will have the benefit of the technical expertise of people who have worked in it, and the older members of the field will have the benefit of the new science that's coming along. There is money going to the Will Steger Foundation to engage students in environmental stewardship through adventure learning. There is a plan to have 80 workshops for 1,000 teachers and naturalists to reach 30,000 students using digital photography. There's an urban wilderness inquiry. This provides outdoor education and recreation on the Minnesota River, and this will be for 20,000 urban youth over 3 years. The expansion of the outdoor classrooms at Minnesota schools. This is a program that started in 1949, and it's outdoor classrooms. And this is going to expand it by 20 and have a new intensive teacher course training new teachers to reach 1,500 teachers and 30,000 students. There is a section here, and I believe that Representative Grothing is going to have an amendment on this one, so I'm going to call your attention to this one, and that is with the Commissioner of Education using natural resources and environment as a way of teaching students and using instruction about those as a way of teaching. There's a something called Project Get Outdoors. This is for southern Minnesota. They're providing toolkits that will facilitate in getting kids outdoors, serving 5,000 children. We're sending money to the Association for the Advancement of Hmong Women to provide environmental information and teaching skills and increase the participation of Southeast Asian communities through fishing skills. There is money going to the International Wolf Center for interactive on-site and distance learning about wolves and their habitat. And finally, We're sending money to Minnesota State University at Mankato to develop online educational materials for the Minnesota River for schools and outreach centers. The remainder of the language, members, is boilerplate language to implement these programs. And with that, I'm glad to take questions.
Okay, are there questions at this point? And then we have the Grayling Amendment that we'll take up in a moment. Representative Junkie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two questions. Back on your state park land acquisition, $2.2 million must be Crow Wing State Park. I find that interesting. What's the number one, I want to know what the cost at Crow Wing State Park is and why we're listing that as a target when I know there's other parks. And then it says within the statutory boundaries. Is that totally within the boundaries? What if it's a three sides and it's in, and one side adjoins a road or something else? I'm trying to figure out what the qualifiers are, because I know Sibley State Park in my area had a piece that was almost all within, if not all, but I'm not sure if it, you know, might have a little piece that's not. And so what are you eating up with the Crow Wing? Why did we name Crow Wing and not the others? Why aren't we just letting the DNR decide, which is the most important? And what's the... what's within statutory boundaries mean?
Let me help out here, and then I'm going to ask Ms. Thornton to further. The reason Crow Wing was specifically named, in my recollection, was that there were two parcels on the river, and that is just an unusual kind of thing to be able to get two parcels on the river. So that is why that was named. And then Ms. Thornton will help out with some additional.
Ms. Thornton.
Mr. Chair, members, Susan Thornton with the LCCMR staff. Mr. Chair, Representative Junkie and members, these are all in holdings within state park statutory boundaries. And these are all DNR priorities. DNR came to the commission with their list of priorities longer than this. And so Crow Wing was singled out, I believe, because it really got the most discussion, so maybe that was an error in drafting and doing that. But there's 9 acres in Crow Wing for $590,000, 160 acres in Scenic for $340,000, 55 acres in Teta Gooch for $240,000, 19 acres in Split Rock for $700,000, and 100 acres in William O'Brien for approximately $330,000, and those are all approximations. The Crow Wing parcels, the Scenic, the Teta Gooch have been purchased by the Parks and Trails Council on behalf of the DNR, and so that would be to enable them to turn those over to the Department of Natural Resources.
And my second question, and I'll look at the list from the DNR on those, page 16, life cycle analysis of options for Minnesota energy needs, $143,000 to the U of M. Life cycle analysis of low carbon energy technologies. Can you tell me what technologies you're looking at getting life cycle analysis on with that money?
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. The typical things that you would be thinking about, like grasses and woods, but I'm going to ask Ms. Thornton, if she can give you some more specificity there.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Representative Junkie, and I have a magic book here full of work programs with more detailed information on all of these that are also posted on the web. So I can reference that. I'm happy to turn over copies to anybody. But they're really looking at our electric energy needs and looking at renewables, wind power, solar power, biomass, looking at advanced combustion, high-efficiency coal, again, biomass co-firing, carbon capture, and then also nuclear power is on their list.
Hey, Representative Junkie, is that any more? Representative Kahn. Representative Wagenius.
If I could, Mr. Chair, these proposals, once they are accepted by the LCCMR, people put in formal work plans, and that's what Ms. Thornton was referring to. So there is a book of work plans that's this big. They are very detailed. And so if folks have questions about any one of these projects in detail, I think just we'll make sure that you get that information.
Okay. And Representative Cotton.
Well, Mr. Chairman, one of the things I really compliment the group on doing, and I compliment, I guess, the legislature for finally getting around to agreeing to this, is that for years and years I talked about the importance of getting these appropriations out right away, as soon as we could, because if we used to wait and tuck them into the whole environmental finance bill because they'd become part of the political manipulation of that bill. And one of the problems with dealing with natural resource issues is that when you pass things in end of May or the end of June, you lose something that the legislature doesn't control, which is a growing season. So it's really important to get this out as fast as we can. You know, more important to get it out fast than to get the bonding bill out fast, because this stuff will really start to work right away. But I do have a question. This is something that we've talked about, and I don't know how many in this room have looked at the ARRA website, which follows the appropriations from that, and it have this incredible website, which was also done in cooperation with MnGeo, which does a whole mapping function, a mapping function based on subject and also on place. And we've talked with we've talked about when we first saw the presentation about how well this, you know, how this website, it's not just us that say it's good. It's gotten an award as the fourth best nationally in the country for following the transparency of ARRA. So some of us at the time said, can we do the whole budget this way? People kind of blanched and said no, but the thought of doing various parts of the budget this way seems to be a highly positive thing to do. And I wondered if you've had any conversation, with SWIFT or MAPS or finance or whatever we call it these days, about doing that. And then the next thing is specifically with David Arbeit, who's the head of MnGeo, which I will never miss a chance to point out, originally started as a very, very small LCMR grant to the University of Minnesota in the early 70s or late 60s. So the answer is mapping and transparency, and can't this appropriation be put into the same system that the ARRA
appropriation was? I'm going to start by asking Mrs. Thornton to point out the data availability requirements in here.
Ms. Thornton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, and members, and I too am operating on subdivision 10 on page 20, data availability requirements, and that's a small piece, Representative Kahn, and that language or similar language has been in the LCMR recommendations, I believe, since you were one-time chair of the commission, and we continue to follow up on that. I think you have a good suggestion. We'll follow up with Mr. Arbeit on making sure that we are lining up. We are working on mapping our projects and having things out on the web, and we're also working with the new requirement for a new website for the new amendment dollars directed towards LCC. And I think your suggestion related to that would be an excellent for LCC to also look at. So we'll follow up more with you.
Okay, and also,
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, to all members of the committee, I really urge you to look at that website. It's spectacular in terms of looking at it. And so the idea, you know, as I said, they turned pink or purple or whatever color you think they would when I asked about putting the whole budget on it. But the idea of putting this budget and also putting the capital bonding budget on it is something that we ought to, you know, I'm tempted to put a requirement into this bill, but why don't you look at it before I do that?
That's how I get it.
For accountability and transparency, for all of the new dollars, we put a requirement in that there be a website with all the projects on, with defined outcomes and ways to evaluate those outcomes. It all goes up on the website. This LCC money goes, LCCMR money is also has those requirements. So I think we're all moving toward transparency up on the website. And in fact, I will tell you that the environment budgets, starting with Pollution Control Agency, we'll hear tomorrow, their budgets are up on the website, hopefully in a way, we at least by statute, we said that in a way that citizens can determine exactly what they're getting for their money. So I believe in what you're saying. We'll work hard for that.
Representative Penn said it. We have Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Wagenius. I have a couple questions. I generally live in the world of taxes and health care, so this is a little bit outside of my area. But on pages on page 5, lines 5-9 through 5-17, can you talk to me a little bit about funding lawyers with the LCCMR money? I'm just curious what this actually relates to, why we're using the money for legal bills, or am I reading it wrong?
Representative Wagenius.
Well, I can't accept your characterization of what is going on here. What the issue is protecting farmland and checking to see if our laws do indeed do that. So the point of all this is preserving agricultural land. Okay, that's the point of it. And so we're looking at applicable laws to see if they will meet that outcome, basically.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Wagenius. I appreciate the description. I'm wondering what we're protecting farmland from. But I'm also wondering why that's not our job as a legislature to be looking at what is in the best interest of our farmland, best interests of our environment, as opposed to shopping it out. I guess I'm not sure why the Farmers Legal Action Group Incorporated is the group to do this job. Maybe they want a bid. I don't know. But Mr. Chairman and Representative Wagenius, one of the things that I'd like to have before we vote on this bill is I'd like to have a description of the projects that were recommended by the LCCMR in terms of the rankings, because I understand there was a pretty significant ranking, series of rankings given, versus the ones that actually made it into the bill. I'm just trying to get a sense of what actually is here related to the recommendations and what's here outside of those recommendations. And, Mr. Chairman, I wouldn't expect that would be here today. I just think that that would be helpful for me in terms of assessing this going forward.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you for bringing up that issue. What's interesting about the folks on LCCMR, we look not just at the rankings that we have kind of done what I would call blind, just we have each individually done rankings, put them all together, but then we discuss those rankings so that if I have not observed something that I should have observed, somebody else can educate me about that. So this is not a closed mind system. This is an open mind system where we can and do educate each other about the proposals, because not one of us is perfect. I may have missed something, totally missed it. And I will say I've done that before. So I know that it's important that we have those discussions and not follow a rigid wrote, you know, this is how we initially ranked him, because those are just initial rankings. But I think we can certainly provide that.
Representative Broad, is that it?
Yep, that's great.
Representative Rukavina?
I'm conspiring with my Republican friends. No, Mr. Chair, members, I sit on the LCCMR with you, in fact, Mr. Chair, and one of the concerns that both Representative Wagenius and you and I have had is jobs created in this bill, because we're going through tough times, and you know there's a lot of land being acquired in here, and also easements, Representative Wagenius. So, in your best estimate, what is that dollar amount?
Is that in your? I can hand it out. There is
Representative Wagenius.
We're going to do a handout for you, if you want. Yes.
Well, while you're looking that up, members, you know, I don't know, Representative Wagenius, if you know the amount of deals, we'll call them deals, that have been closed from last year's land purchases, both through the LCCMR and through the Lessard Sams and that extra sales tax money. But my understanding is that I don't believe that even 10% of those deals have been cut, and we keep buying more and more land, and we can't close on the land that we bought, number one. And number two, we can't take care of the land that we currently have, including state parks, and we're buying in purchasings. I offered an amendment here last week to actually put some infrastructure in the state park that most of you seem to want on Lake Vermilion, and nobody, or very few, some of my friends on the other side, I think even on this side, might have voted for it, to be honest with the people about how we're going to do anything with this property for the public good. So do you know that actual dollar amount, and then do you know how many deals have been actually closed by the DNR's legal team?
Ms. Martin or Representative Wagenius, whoever.
I don't know the answer to that particular question. I know that DNR was slow on some of the bonding projects, and we did light some fires.
Well,
Ms. Thornton may be able to answer, and let her answer the question about LCCMR in particular.
Ms.
Well,
Martin?
Well, or maybe you can, while you're looking that up, I can tell you that things don't move very fast, and I've been working on transferring a former wild rice paddy from the DNR's control to a local area control, and it's been many years, I think, that we've been working on this, maybe three or so. And, you know, we've got a harbor going in Tower, where we've gotten close to $6 million of taxpayers' money tied up for 3 years to dredge a little river that was always there. And, you know, these things just back up and back up, and meanwhile we don't have the money to take care of the land that we have. And, you know, we talk about the bonding bill. I don't know the difference between the bonding bill and some of these bills as far as having a shovels in the ground project. And so we should really look at these bills, members, because we got 230,000 people collecting unemployment insurance and about 1,000 a week dropping off. And there may be a way we can use this money, at least during this, I'll call it the, you know, small depression for instead of the Great Recession. And the bottom line is we have the final say in what this bill looks like as it moves forward. And during tough times, I think we have to think about what's going to help put the most boots on the ground, so to speak, and use our money wisely. And Representative Junkie, you know, last year you cited that project on page 16. Just recently, I remember last year we had one that gave the university like 188 grand to study how we can reduce coal emissions. And I said, why don't we just put solar panels on a few of the buildings and put some people to work and do something like that with our money during these tough times? But, you know, here's a perfect example. I bet you if you put up $143,000 worth of solar panels on Falwell Hall, where we're fixing it up, that we could probably do a little bit to help the environment and put people to work. So as this bill moves forward, I intend to look at members, because, again, I want to emphasize the fact that these deals don't get cut. It takes years to do them. We keep buying more land. We're not honest enough, I guess, at times to appropriate the money that's been promised to things like a state park, as an example, where the commissioner, Holston, by his own admission, says it's going to cost $30 million to do anything at that new land purchase. So I'm just asking members to keep an open mind as this bill moves forward into the floor, that maybe we could use the money in a more sound manner. Finally, look through it, and if this money isn't supposed to be supplanting, you know, monies that the legislature should appropriate, there's a pretty good chunk of money that goes to the university and the DNR and the Department of Agriculture every year. And with that, that's what I have to say about the bill.
Okay. Representative Wagenius.
Okay.
I remind Representative Rukavina regularly that graduate students are people too, and they need jobs. But not to be trite about this, I would like Ms. Thornton to go over this piece of paper that was just handed out to you.
Ms. Thornton.
Mr. Chair and members, and in response to Representative Rukavina's first question, we get updates twice a year on each of these projects, and I do not have the answer right off the top of my head as to what's been done. We will look that up and give that to you. That's for what remains. What's handed out is an estimate that we prepared as staff on the jobs within this set of recommended appropriations. As I spoke to before, we have detailed work programs for each of these appropriations and relatively detailed budgets for each of those. So for the most part, these are based on real numbers before us of percentage of FTE. So we didn't, and we looked at the federal guidelines and so forth for how jobs were calculated, but for the most part, these are based on actual numbers. And we did take out of the $26 million, approximately close to $7 million is for acquisition fee title, acquisition and conservation easements. And so those direct dollars for those activities would have fewer jobs, indirect jobs associated with them. So we actually, in order not to skew the potential jobs or job creation within this bill, we did take out that acquisition. So our estimate of these projects lasting for over 2 to 3 years is approximately 207 FTEs of the 19 million of the 26 million that's before you today as the Commission's recommendation. And then so we looked at actual impact on employment, and then we also looked at contracts, some indirect formula estimates, and then the second bullet on the sheet, as you can see, there are a range of people, job classifications that are included within all of these different projects. We bring that to you anticipating some level of this question, and we did this for last year's bill also.
Okay, we have Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Wagenius. You touched on this a little bit, but I'm wondering if you can go into a little bit more detail. I did get a chance to review the rankings that the LCCMR, who, remember, people wanted to have a citizen representation on this, and so I'm concerned about, recommendations. And I know that there are several on here. I believe that the discussion was the rankings were something like 1 to 9, and the talk was that you give first priority to those over 6, I think. And I noticed there are several projects in here that have rankings. The sustainable biofuels on page 15 had a ranking of 4 originally. On page 17, the adventure learning had a ranking of 4. The digital photography had a ranking of 4.5. And the youth outdoor education, for example, had a 4.71. And you mentioned that you weren't just going on the ratings, but you also brought, there's new information that came into it that helped you make your decisions. And I was just wondering if you could explain that a little more, because I'm wondering what kind of additional information would incline this bill to include digital photography and youth outdoor education over maybe some other things. And to me, I'm wondering if we've got a little bit of misplaced priorities in this bill. So perhaps if you could go into a little bit more detail of the additional information that was looked at.
Okay. Representative Wagenius.
I can do that. If you'll recall, we had each of the ones that was met the first screening came in for a half an hour and did a presentation, and we all had a chance to hear those presentations. But without discussion, we went back, and I say that very strongly, without discussion, we went back and did rankings. Staff pull those rankings together. When we came together with those rankings that we saw, then we had an opportunity to discuss some of these things. And in that discussion,
would say, well, I know about this project. It has been working. It's been going on for years. I'll tell you, I never had heard of it, the outdoor forest classrooms. Never had heard of it until this came up. So I would not have probably ranked it very high. I don't know what my ranking is now. It's been months and months ago, but I didn't know about it. But after the description and hearing from people who were familiar, because it's mainly outstate, it's not metro, after you hear about what's going on from people who have really dealt with it, and that's why you have citizens and legislators on this group, then you say, oh, I hadn't thought about that. I mean, this is, when I say we're trying to be open-minded, that's what I mean about open-minded, that what I know is, I'm not going to limit myself to just what I know. So I can only use me for an example and look at some of the projects that I had no idea existed. That's why in my notes I wrote down that that has existed, that outdoor forest has existed since 1949. But it tends to be up north, and it doesn't tend to be in the southwest, and it isn't in the southwest. And one of the one things people said, this really works well. We need to expand it so that folks all over the state have the same advantages. I had not heard that argument before. Didn't know the argument existed.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Representative Wagenius. I appreciate hearing that response. I guess I have more of a comment than a question. I just wonder if, you know, if the people, if they knew about the this trust fund and where the money was being spent, I'm just question if this is where they would choose to put the dollars, because to me, I was rather surprised at some of the projects were in here. I just don't know that they're the priority projects that they should be. So I guess I would just ask every member to really look at these things that are in here and decide for yourself if you really believe that this is, you know, where we should be going.
Representative Guineas or Ms. Thornton, why don't one of you describe the makeup of LCCMR currently? Because that may help answer that particular point, the citizen involvement and so on.
And I'm going to ask Ms. Thornton to do that, but if I could comment before, I would invite you not to look at the description in the bill or the description in here. I would invite you to read the work plans, because they are in detail with specific outcomes. So without reading the work plans, I think it's somewhat hard to understand all of these. Ms. Thornton.
Ms. Thornton.
Mr. Chair and members, the makeup of the LCCMR, Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources, since 2000, the legislative session of 2006, are 17 members, 5 members from the House, 5 members from the Senate, 3 majority, 2 minority, and then 7 appointed non-legislative citizens. I consider all of you citizens. And 5 are appointed by the governor, and 1 is appointed by the House, and 1 is appointed by the Senate of that makeup. So of those 17 members. We're also required to, in the final allocation, have a supermajority of the members, not just a simple majority, but a supermajority voting in favor of these recommendations to you. But the commission is an advisory body to the legislature.
Okay, very good. Thank you. And Representative Biskins.
Pass.
Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And earlier, Representative Rukavina asked a question about how much was in the bill was for land acquisition, and I think this handout that you provided has that number on there at $6.7 million. That's roughly 25% of the LCCMR recommendations here. And I would just probably echo Representative Rukavina's concerns that we should maybe look less at acquisition and more at management and investment in the existing holdings and easements that that we have in through the DNR and various other programs. I've just served my first year on the LCCMR, and I appreciate the learning experience, but it was been one of my concerns coming from an agricultural district that we're competing with private landowners, farmers, if you will. You know, when they see a parcel of land come up for sale and they end up bidding against, you know, one unit of government or, you know, an agency or a group that's going to exchange the real estate with a government agency. And the other concern I have is that, you know, when land holdings go into, you know, government acquisition, that the local units of government are suffering loss of revenue with the PILT payments and so forth, not keeping up to what they would anticipate from privately held land. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius, I have not a narrow but a broader question, and I hope to get educated a little bit. I see these subdivisions for funds, and I guess I particularly was focusing on the environmental education. Is there kind of a broader plan for each of these areas that these various projects are supposed to support? Is there kind of a vision or a mission that these funds are supposed to support, or is this kind of a one-by-one evaluation of individual projects? I guess, and I particularly was looking at the environmental education. You know, what are we trying to fund towards? What global goal is supposed to be delivered through that?
I'm going to ask Ms. Thornton to talk about the strategic plan and also the process of. We don't. The language in the Constitution is extraordinarily broad, so the way you can spend the money, I mean, it's air, water, extremely broad. So we focus by having some categories. And I will tell you there's some repeat categories where there is a lot of concern. Invasive species is a repeat category. Waters is a repeat category for the science of understanding why lakes are deteriorating, for example. So while there's a strategic plan, and I want her to tell you about it, I also want you to know that there are some repeated focuses because of, I think, the need. Invasive species and waters would be two that I would strongly point out to you, where we don't know sometimes why our lakes are deteriorating, why they go from a clear state to a muck state. We have some ideas, and science is really helping us, I think, very rapidly to understand what is going on. But we haven't quite got there yet. And so that's why you see a lot of waters projects, a lot of science projects in waters. I think they're extraordinarily strong. And I think that's the strength of my own personal part of this. That's the strength of this bill. But I would like Ms. Thornton to tell you a little bit about the big picture.
Ms. Thornton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, and members, as Representative Wagenius said, our first guiding element is the constitutional language for the trust fund. The next one is Minnesota Statutes 116P, which further guide and define where the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund will be spent. And then also statutorily, the commission is required to adopt a six-year plan to guide the expenditures. That is posted on our website. Our most recent six-year plan was adopted just about a year ago, January 2009, and that strategic plan was based on our discussions, input, citizen input, and then also the statewide conservation and preservation plan, which was developed for the legislature, for the commission, for the trust fund, from an appropriation a number of years ago. And that in and of itself had 52 recommendations in it. The commission worked very closely with that, with the people who put that plan together from the University of Minnesota, agencies, nonprofits, local government, who all worked on that. That became the basis of our strategic plan for the trust fund. Then we issue a request for proposal that is based on that strategic plan. So it's kind of an iterative process, but all going back to these guiding documents. That strategic plan is on our website. I think it's the one document I didn't bring with me today. We'd be happy to get you a copy of that.
Mr. Chair, I don't need to see it. I can look that up. I guess the follow-up question then, is there alignment between your strategic plan and the strategic goals of other agencies, other people working in these various areas, because there is a significant overlap with what other groups and organizations or agencies are doing. Is there some alignment? Do you look at that, or you know, is it independent?
Ms. Thornton, or Representative Gwynne Guineas, whichever.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, it's very much aligned. Those, we rely on that expertise in those other agencies at the university to bring forth those forward-looking ideas. And so, yes, we pay ongoing attention to what are in those other planning documents. And again, that makes up some of our baseline information.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my last, I have a, my only comment would be, it seems to me that people who are concerned about the substance of the bill in regard to land acquisition versus other things should be looking at what the strategic plan calls for. And if that needs to change, then that maybe is where the direction should be, not just looking at individual bills as they come forward for the appropriations.
And I'm going to recognize Representative Greiling, and we'll take up her amendment, and then I'd like to vote on the bill, because we do have three other bills. It should go fairly quickly because they were acted upon last year, but I would like to get them done today. So, Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move the A-10-2094 amendment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is just to insert, it's the integrating environmental and outdoor education, and this is an amendment from the Department of Education and the DNR to clarify that we're talking about teacher support for their environmental instruction of academic standards, but not for the actual academic standards. The science standards are in rulemaking, so we want to clarify they're not working on the standards, but the instruction of the standard.
Okay, and Representative Guineas on the amendment.
I think that's an appropriate clarification.
Okay, the amendment is before us. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Guineas renews her motion that House File 2624, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair, in front of us is also an amendment A2.
We adopted that earlier. That was.
Oh, I'm sorry. Before I came, I didn't make any sense of line 1.3 of that. Did you eliminate that? It says delete 550,000 and insert 550,000. Oh, I'm sorry. One less zero.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Okay.
Very technical amendment.
Thank you.
But glad you're watching.
I wasn't watching close enough.
Any further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Thank you, Ms. Thornton. Before you leave, you did have at least one other staff person that you might want to introduce. You're a relatively small staff, but hardworking. He's behind you, Michael. And are there others here from? Oh, yes. Okay. Why don't you introduce them very quickly?
Michael McDonough, who, when I talked to you about the science peer review, I mean, not that that's the only thing he does, but I just think that is so important in these days, and Julie Sheffler and Mike Banker.
So if any of you go down there for any requests, you'll find that the staff is very accommodating, and any additional information you need, they will certainly provide that. So thank you.
Yes, Mr. Chair, we work for all of you.
Okay. And the next bill then is House File 1467. Again, this is a bill that we dealt with last session in committee, but didn't quite make it to passage, so then it's referred back to the last committee that I had dealt with it. If you can just very quickly, Representative Nelson, give us a recap of the bill, but we'll need to have a motion before that. Representative Benson, would you care to make a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I move House File 1467, the first engrossment, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, that motion is before us. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee. Just to remind you, House File 1467 is about safety on the rail lines, about track safety. Basically, all it does is it requires the Minnesota Department of Transportation to apply for certain federal grants that are going to be coming out. Now, they haven't been authorized yet, but to apply for these technology upgrades, it's for switch monitors on tracks, and that's what the bill does. Last year, there was no fiscal note on it. It came out no fiscal note. I understand that the MnDOT's saying there's going to be a cost to them this year of monitoring it, and so I've heard that Representative Solberg wants to see it in Ways and Means. But that's what the bill does. Again, it was last year. It was on. It had its second reading on the floor, and it was also included in part of the transportation policy bill that was vetoed by the governor. So it actually had passed the floor and was on the governor's desk. So.
Okay. Any discussion then on the motion? Representative,
why didn't this? If Ways and Means was the last committee it was in, why didn't it just go back to Ways and Means?
It was not. Didn't go to Ways and Means.
Oh.
So we had a fiscal note that it had no cost, and now the department is saying that there may be as many as 600 hours. It sounds to me as though it's something the department can deal with internally, but. Just so we're following all of our procedures, we wanted to make sure that it went there this time. So the motion is before us. Any further discussion? Seeing none then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. We have Representative Norton's bill, House File 984, before us.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Hundley.
I'd like to move that... House File 984 be recommended to pass and sent to
General Register.
General Register.
Okay, and this one is Representative Norton's bill. The motion is before us. And again, it's like the previous one. If you could just quickly explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Similarly, this was a bill that was on the House floor waiting for action at the end of last session. It was waiting for its Senate companion. We're hoping to get it all the way through the process this year. It's just a simple bill. It encourages the Department of Human Services to include primary care prevention as part of their primary care providers' prevention. It defines what that is, requires documentation, and referral to a dentist. And so I think we had both the Minnesota Medical Association and the Minnesota Dental Association sitting here a moment ago. I think they gave up on us and they're out in the hall now. But they are holding hands and in support of this particular bill. And the Department of Human Services, also the changes we made last year in your committee, made it have a zero fiscal note. So,
okay, Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This looks like it's going to cost money, and yet I'm not seeing a fiscal note.
There is a zero fiscal note, Mr. Chair. And I will say this is already MA reimbursable. This is just encouraging it to be part of a well-child visit. So there isn't a fiscal note.
All right.
Okay, any other discussion? Seeing none, then, all in favor of the motion that the bill will be recommended to pass and placed on the General Register, House File 984. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Senate File 536, Representative Champion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move Senate File 536, the second engrossment, be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations.
Okay, that motion is before us. Representative Champion on the bill.
Thank you. As you know, that my House file was the companion to the Senate file, and this committee did, in fact, hear the House file, and it was passed. But now we're looking to adopt the Senate file, which expands my original House file, and so I believe it's appropriate for it to go back to the Committee on Government Operations. I will also say that this is an enabling statute. It provides an opportunity or a tool for the Commissioner and the University of Minnesota and MNSCU to be able to adopt policies that would encourage hiring of, you know, low-income folks and other members of our wonderful society. There is no fiscal impact, and so there would be no need for this particular bill to come back to finance because there is no fiscal impact. So it's for those reasons I'm asking for you to pass it and for it to be re-referred to the to the Committee on Government Operations.
And that's so it can be matched up with the Senate file. Okay.
Absolutely.
Any further discussion on the bill or the motion? Seeing Representative Pepin.
I'm just trying to look through this quickly. I'm wondering, so would the employers then have a say on who they were hiring, like if there were felons involved? Or
Representative Champion.
Would they be able to say no?
Representative, absolutely. They could design their own ordinances or policies. We are not directing them at all to do anything in particular, but giving them a tool. As you know, that when we had some testimony in the other committees that we had and have support from other cities saying that we would love to have this tool. We're not necessarily saying that we will use it, but it's always good to have. And so, no, we are not directing anyone to do anything in particular, but giving them the tools by which to do it.
Representative Pepin.
I just want to thank you, Representative Champion. I just wanted to clarify the language. So the language in the bill, the last two words of the 110 says require persons, and then go down to 1.12, a minimum number or percentage. So, to me, the word require says that they have to do that. Maybe you could just clarify for me what require.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it just gives some guidance of some of the things they possibly could do if that's what they wanted to do. So, there again, this is an enabling statute. That's why it says may adopt rules. So, that is the all-encompassing phrase that is most appropriate here in order to say that you don't have to, but this is something that you can do.
You know, I think our motion really here, members, is procedural because it's my understanding that the Senate language is that has passed the Senate. It's not only just matching it up with the Senate file, but the language is different. And so Representative Pawlowski's committee will be working on the differences in the language, so it may come out of that committee differently than it is here, but depending on the action of that committee and the will of the House authors. So. Just point that out, so we probably are talking about something that will ultimately change in the other committee. Representative Szymanski.
I'll pass, Mr. Chair.
Okay, with that, any further discussion? Seeing none, then, all in favor of Representative Champion's motion that House File 536, the second engrossment, be recommended to pass and re-referred to state and local government. All those in favor then signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. With that, just notice the bill referrals, and the next meeting is 6:30 p.m. Tonight to deal with the governor's supplemental budget. Pending, by the way, the time on that, pending the debate dealing with capital investment on the House floor today. So, listen to either Representative Solberg or myself, because it's a joint committee meeting this evening, if there's a change in the time. With that, meeting adjourned.